Harris returned to her employer's suite in her own off-duty clothes, the first time she'd worn them since leaving the service. Since Lady Cecilia was wearing a formal dinner gown, she put on her own, and had the satisfaction of seeing her employer truly surprised.
"My dear, I had no idea you looked like that. I'm sorry, that was unforgivable."
"Not really, although it was your uniform that made me look the other way."
Harris knew very well what the close-fitting, jet-beaded bodice did for her. The flared black skirt swirled around her ankles as she came to the table. She would never have the advantage of Cecilia's height, but she had learned to use color and line to compensate.
"Oh, one last bit of business before dinner. What about the inquest on Ickland?"
Lady Cecilia slipped into her seat and picked up her napkin.
"Not a problem. With the documentation you supplied and the medical evidence from Timmons, this will be treated as an obvious accident."
Harris sat down. She knew she shouldn't continue the subject at table, but questions cluttered her mind.
"I wish..."
"Not now. We can discuss this later if you wish, though I would prefer to wait until tomorrow, local time. By then, forensics should have confirmed the cause of death, and I'll know more."
Harris blinked. She had not realized that Lady Cecilia would be dealing with the legal problems of Ickland's death while she worked on the ship. She had thought she would have to do it all herself. Dinner arrived, with a cluster of attendants. Harris found herself staring at a tiny wedge of something decorated with a sprig of green.
"La Safarin snailfish fin. The garnish is frilled zillic. We grew that aboard before... at one time."
Harris tasted the snailfish fin, which had been dipped in a mustardy sauce. It had an odd but winsome flavor, perfectly complemented by the zillic. She had eaten at places that served this sort of food, usually while on political assignment, but the service favored less quixotic cuisine. One rarely had time to spend hours at the table. She hoped she would not have to spend hours at dinner now. With the relaxation induced by comfortable clothes, she had begun to realize how tired she was. Next came a hot soup, its brilliant reds and golds contrasting with the pallid snailfish fin. Fish and vegetables, flavors well blended, with enough spice to make her eyes water.
"Sikander chowder. Good when you're tired. I used to have this a lot when I was competing."
Harris wondered what she'd competed at, but didn't ask. She could have eaten two bowls of the chowder, and twice as many of the crisp rolls served alongside it.
"This is delicious."
"I thought you'd like that. I'm going to try their roast chicken and rice, but if you want more chowder, just say so."
Courtesy and appetite argued, and courtesy won. Harris let the waiter remove her soup plate and accepted the roast chicken. Slices of breast meat, marinated and grilled after roasting, formed the wings of a swan. Its body was a mound of spiced rice. The graceful head and neck had been artfully formed of curled spice grass. She took a cautious bite of the rice, ginger, mustard, coriander, and devoured it with almost indecent haste. She had been hungrier than she knew. The slices of chicken disappeared, then the spice grass. The next course seemed out of sequence to Harris, but she realized that Lady Cecilia could set her own standards. Still, the platter of fruit, ponax-grown melons, and berries didn't suit her at the moment. She nibbled a jade green slice of melon to be polite. Lady Cecilia, too, seemed as ready to talk as eat. She began with a question about the literature studied at the academy. One of her great-nephews had said no one there read Silvas. Was that true? Harris recognized this opening and added to her reply, "Yes, they read Silvas, but only the famous trilogy," a comment about a more contemporary writer. For a few minutes, they discussed Kurlskvan's recent work, feeling out each other's knowledge. Lady Cecilia had not read the first novel. Harris had not read the third most recent. The cheeses came in. The fruit remained. Harris sliced a wafer of orange Jabilla cheese and floated a comment about visual arts. Lady Cecilia waved that away.
"As for me, I like pictures of horses. The more accurate it is, the better. Aside from that, I know nothing about the visual arts and don't want to. I was made to study it when I was a girl, but since then, no. Now let me ask you, what do you know about horses?"
"Nothing. Except that we had to have riding lessons in the academy. Officers must be able to sit a horse properly for ceremonial occasions. That's what they said."
"You don't like them?"
"What, horses? Frankly, m'lady, to a spacer, they're simply large, dirty, smelly animals with an appalling effect on the environmental system. I remember one time having to inspect a commercial hauler which was taking horses somewhere. Why, I can't imagine, and it was a mess. I don't blame the animals, of course. They've evolved on a planet, and on something the size of a planet, there's enough space for them. But in the hold of a starship, no.
Did you like riding them?
Lady Cecilia had a mild, vague expression which didn't suit her.
It wasn't as bad as some of the other things we had to learn. I did fairly well, in fact. But it's so useless. When would anyone need to ride a horse anywhere?
Only on uncivilized planets where it rains without permission.
Belatedly, Harris remembered that the reason her employer so wanted to be on time was for the start of the fox hunting season, which had something to do with horses.
Of course, many people do enjoy them, recreationally.
Yes, many people do. I, for one. Did your lessons at the academy ever include riding them in the open, across country?
No. We had all our lessons in an enclosed ring.
So you have no experience of real riding?
Harris wondered why riding in a ring was not real. The horse had been large and had smelled like a horse. The sore muscles she got from riding had been real enough. But from her employer's face, this was not going to be a popular question.
I haven't ridden anywhere but in those lessons, no.
Ah, then I suggest a wager.
A wager?
Yes. If the refitters are finished and we clear this station 48 hours after we arrived... No, 50 hours, for you will need a little time, I'm sure, to ready for departure. Then you win, and I will submit to be lectured by you on visual arts for 10 hours. If, however, we are delayed, you lose and will owe me 10 hours, which I shall use in teaching you to ride, really ride, on my simulator.
An interesting wager. But that assumes that I want to bore you with 10 hours of visual arts, which I don't. What I wish you knew more about was your own ship. Suppose, if I win, you spend 10 hours with me learning how to tell if your refitters did a good job.
You are that confident that we will be out in 50 hours?
I am confident that, either way, we will both learn something worthwhile.
You're mocking me. You don't think riding is worthwhile.
No, m'lady. I am not mocking you, which would be both rude and foolish. You think it is important. I have not, up until now, but perhaps I'm wrong. If I lose, you have the chance to convince me. And I'm very sure that you would have been spared expense and inconvenience both had you known more about the workings of your yacht. Did you always take the horse a groom brought you and get on and ride right away? We were taught to inspect the tack for ourselves, to look at the animal's feet...
Hooves,
and see if it had any problems.
I see your point. No, certainly I did not take my groom's word for everything. Very well, then. If you win, I will study my yacht's particulars, and if I win, you will study horsemanship. Is it agreed?
Certainly.
Harris reached across and shook her employer's hand. How hard could it be, after all? The simulator wasn't a real horse. It couldn't step on her, or bite her, or run away with her.
M'lady, your nephew and some friends are on their way.
No, I don't want to see them.
I'm sorry, m'lady. They're already in the tube.
Oh, blast it.
Lady Cecilia half rose from her chair, and the attendants scurried to help her. She waved them away, reseated herself, and glanced at Harris.
I apologize, Captain, for the past moment and the coming hour. I'll get rid of them as soon as I can.
Ronnie was first through the door when it opened.
Aunt Cecilia, it's unforgivable. That disgusting captain of yours put us in a cheap place as far from here as you can imagine. They don't even have a...
He stopped abruptly as Harris turned to face him. She was delighted to see how far his jaw dropped before he got it back under control.
It's the captain.
The two young women looked ashamed of themselves and their companions. The blonde one opened her mouth and shut it.
That's a lovely dress, Captain Serrano.
Harris noted that Ronnie gave her a disgusted look, so she smiled at the young woman. Rafaela, she thought her name was.
Thank you. I'm glad you appreciate it.
You might want to know that I approved your assignment to that hotel. If you want to blame someone, blame me. Captain Serrano has been far too busy saving our lives to spare any energy to make your lives miserable.
Ronnie was a strange color, two shades darker than bright pink.
What is unforgivable is your rude intrusion into my dinner and private conversation and your insulting my captain. You will apologize to Captain Serrano now, or you can find your own way home and take whatever punishment you get, which I am sure you richly deserve.
Here, now, I...
Lady Cecilia quelled George with a glance. Ronnie looked from one to the other and gave a minute shrug.
I'm sorry, Aunt Cecilia and Captain Serrano. It was not... I didn't mean to be rude, I just...
Wanted your own way. I know. And that is an entirely inadequate apology. You called Captain Serrano disgusting. You will retract that.
Harris had not realized that any civilian could sound so much like a flag officer. Suddenly, it was easy to imagine Lady Cecilia in full-dress uniform with braid up to her shoulders. Ronnie's flush darkened and his lip curled. The glance he shot Harris was unchastened and furious.
I'm sorry, Captain Serrano, that I referred to you as disgusting. It was ungentlemanly.
Harris nodded, dismissing it. She would say nothing that might make things worse between aunt and nephew.
You may go now.
Lady Cecilia picked up her glass and sipped. Harris doubted if she knew whether she had water or wine in it. The girls turned to go at once. George backed up a step, but Ronnie looked as if he were inclined to argue.
Now, and don't roam too far from your hotel unless you carry a comm unit. I will give you only 1 hour's notice to reboard, and it would not hurt my feelings to leave you here.
Ronnie gave a stiff bow, turned on his heel, and almost pushed the others out of the suite.
Oh, I'm truly sorry. Ronnie suffers from being the oldest boy in his family, the first grandchild in our branch, and his parents' pride. He was spoiled before he was born, I dare say, if there's a way to indulge an embryo in the tank. The mess he's in now... Sorry, it's not fair to bore you with this.
Harris smiled and sipped. Water for her, while the refitting was going on. She could afford not the slightest haze between her and reality.
Lady Cecilia, nothing that concerns you bores me. Surprises me, perhaps, but don't fear that I'm bored. If you wish to discuss it...
I suppose you think you could straighten him out.
It's not my job, straightening out your nephew. Unless you request it. And then... I don't know. When I've had someone of his social class to deal with, it's because he or she volunteered. I had leverage based on their own motivation.
You must despise us.
Why? Because you have a bratty nephew? I've seen admirals' children with the same problem.
Really? I thought military children were born saluting the obstetrician and clicked their heels as soon as they stood up.
Oh, their parents' wish. No, m'lady. We're born squally brats the same as everyone else, and have to be civilized the same way. Your nephew seems to me the logical result of privilege, but no worse than others.
Thank God for that. I'd been imagining you all this time turning up your nose at me for having such a nephew.
Harris hoped her face didn't reveal that she had thought that, and shook her head.
Milady, as you said, I've been too busy to give much thought to your nephew. Your crew, now... If you want to talk about your nephew, feel free. I'm listening.
He got in trouble.
Harris listened to the story of the Princess Singer and the rest with outward calm and inward satisfaction. About what she expected from that sort of young man. She hadn't realized he was in the Royal Aerospace Service, and wondered aloud why he'd been foisted off on his aunt when his colonel should have been able to handle the situation.
Because my sweet sister wouldn't allow it. He certainly could have been posted to, say, Shing San, where his regiment has a work depot for a year, or someplace where he'd actually do useful work. But Berenice interceded and got him a year's sabbatical. A sabbatical in the military, on the promise that he would not show his face in the capital.
Harris considered just how Cecilia's sister could have that much influence with the crown.
Does Ronnie look much like his father?
Yes, but that doesn't answer your real question. Ronnie's an R.E., a registered embryo. Surely you have them.
I've heard of them.
It cost more than a year's salary to have an RE, and what you were paying for was not technology, but insurance. In this instance, it also meant that Ronnie had not resulted from a casual liaison. Anyway, my sister Berenice decided that I should take Ronnie on. She never approved of the way I live, and I was there, handy.
Because Captain Olin ran late.
Yes. Normally, I'm at the capital only for the family business meeting. In and out as fast as possible. This year, I missed the meeting, which meant my proxy voted my shares, and not as I would have wished, and arrived just in time for Ronnie's disgrace. These are not unconnected. It was apparently in celebrating his first opportunity to vote his own shares at the meeting that he overindulged and came to brag about the singer.
So, your sister had your yacht redecorated?
And she is paying for Ronnie's expenses, up to a point. I'm supposed to be grateful. Harris wondered what had caused the bad feeling in her family in the first place. She waited in attentive silence in case Lady Cecilia wanted to say more, but the older woman turned to ask the attendants to bring the sweet. Harris was glad to see the last of the fruit and cheese, but not really interested in the sweet. She wanted a few hours' sleep.
If you'll excuse me, I really need to check with the refitting crew aboard and my watch officer.
Oh, certainly. Go ahead. Lady Cecilia's expression was carefully neutral. Did she think Harris was disgusted with her? Harris felt a surge of sympathy for the older woman.
I have a wager to win, remember?
That got the open smile she hoped for, and Lady Cecilia raised her glass in salute. We shall see. I have the feeling you'll make an excellent horsewoman.
Oh, as the luck falls and my ability to push the refitters succeeds. See you later.
Lady Cecilia watched her captain leave the room and wondered what the woman really thought. Clearly, she had more qualifications than shipboard skills alone. She was well-read, she wore good clothes, she knew what to do with the array of eating utensils common to fine dining, and she had surprising tact. On the face of it, she would have made a far more compatible sister than Berenice. She let herself imagine the two of them riding side by side across the training fields, relaxing together over dinner. No, this woman never relaxed, not really. Her captain might snatch a few hours' sleep, but would doubtless dream of wiring diagrams and structural steel. She herself would follow this excellent dinner with a relaxing stroll in the hotel's excellent garden, and then sleep as long as she liked in her luxurious bed, with all its inventive amenities. Morning brought complications, as Cecilia had expected. This was not the first time one of her employees had died, just the first on her yacht, and by far the most violent. She had already contacted the legal firm recommended by her family's own solicitors. The bright-eyed young man in formal black had been waiting downstairs by the concierge's desk when she emerged from her bedroom and called for breakfast. She looked at the local time and did a double take. Mid-morning of main shift, and he had time to wait on her? She checked her captain's whereabouts while he was on the way up, and found, as she expected, that Serrano was back at work on the yacht.
Now, Lady Cecilia, I'm sure you're simply devastated by this, but let me assure you that our firm is experienced...
Wait! I'm going to eat breakfast, and you're welcome to join me, but no business until afterwards, though in fact I'm not devastated, and if you weren't experienced, you wouldn't have been recommended. He fidgeted all through breakfast, refusing to eat. Finally, his nervous twitches got to her, and she gave up on the diced crustaceans in a puree of mixed tubers. It was mediocre anyway, too heavily flavored with dill and some local spice that burnt her tongue without offering a taste worth the pain. She finished with a large pastry and a silver bowl of some red jam, quite flavorful, and nodded to him.
Go on now. What's the damage?
Your crewman that was killed.
Environmental technician Nils Ickland. He disobeyed the captain's orders to wear his protective suit, opened a badly overfull sludge tank, and died of hydrogen sulfide poisoning. You have seen the data cubes.
Yes, ma'am. Lady Cecilia, our senior partners reviewed them and feel that you have a very strong case for accidental death.
So what is the problem?
Well...
The young man fidgeted some more, and Lady Cecilia began to compose the memo she would send to the family solicitors, explaining why this firm was not suitable.
It's the union, ma'am. They think it's the captain's fault for sending him into a dangerous area, for inadequate supervision in allowing him to enter the area without his suit on. Particularly since your other crewman also did not have his suit properly on and says that all the captain did was tell them to meet there, suited up.
And how was the captain to know that he would open the hatch before she got there? Why didn't he wait?
That's not the point. They're inclined to argue that the captain should have been there to enforce the order to suit up, or at least another officer. On larger vessels, of course, there would be a supervisor. Technically, Ickland held a supervisory rating, but he hadn't been acting in that capacity. And the maintenance logs and emergency drills...
That was Captain Olin's misconduct. Captain Serrano told me she had begun training crew and reestablishing the correct procedures.
But she hadn't completed that process yet. And that's what the union is arguing. I need to interview the captain.
She's aboard the ship overseeing the refitting. You'd have to suit up. Excuse me a moment.
It might be the office for me.
Cecilia waved him to silence as she pressed the button to her ear.
Sorry to bother you, but we have a new problem that may help solve an old one.
What's that? The young man across from her looked as if he were trying to grow his ears longer. It gave him a very odd expression.
Mr. Brynear has found items in one of the scrubbers. It might explain why Ickland risked going in unsuited, and it might explain why Captain Olin connived at a fake maintenance procedure.
Her captain said no more. Cecilia hoped it was because she assumed her employer's innocence and intelligence both. You would prefer to discuss this someplace else?
I would, but it is clearly a matter for law enforcement. Mr. Brynear has documented the discovery.
That meant law enforcement had already been summoned. What could Captain Olin have been up to? Smuggling? But what? Cecilia realized she had no idea how large a scrubber was or what would fit into it, but she couldn't ask over an unsecured comm line. It seems I have a good chance to win our wager. Where shall I meet you? I have legal advice with me.
We could all come there, or you could come to the refitters. Your counsel should know.
We'll come. Cecilia felt she had to have some refuge from conflict. She would meet trouble elsewhere. In a few brief phrases, she explained the little she understood to the young man, who gulped and asked permission to call back to his office. While I change. She headed for the bedroom and Myrtis. What did one wear when one's crewman had died of an accident that might be related to smuggling, and the goods, whatever they were, had been found aboard one's yacht? What could convey innocence, outrage, and the determination to be a good citizen? She had never been skilled at this sort of thing. Berenice would have known instantly which scarf or pin, which pair of shoes would give the right impression. Cecilia opted for formal and dark, with a hat, which hid the unruly lock of hair that wanted to stand straight up from her head. When she emerged, the young man explained that a senior partner would meet her at the refitters. He would escort her there and hand over the case papers. Cecilia smiled at him and raged inwardly. They should have sent a senior partner in the first place. No doubt they were billing the family at the senior partner's rate. The gray-haired man outside the refitter's offices flicked a glance at the younger one that made him hand over his brief comp and then leave.
Ah, Lady Cecilia.
Yes, and your...
Sir Granzia. And you're quite right that we should not have sent a junior partner. We should have known that you would not call in legal help for a minor problem. And the individual who made that decision has been so informed.
He offered his arm. She took it.
Ah, I had wondered.
Cecilia let herself be guided into the front office of the refitters. Ser Granzia, it seemed, knew the way. His guidance was subtle but unmistakable. Cecilia noticed that the flat gray tweed carpet of the front office gave way to a flat utilitarian surface, dully reflecting the overhead lights. On either side, small offices stood open, cluttered with terminals, parts, schematics. She didn't recognize any of it. Around a corner, carpet reappeared, this time a rich green, much softer. Double doors at the end of the corridor led into a spacious conference room with a wide window to the same sort of view her hotel suite provided. Four people waited there, a tall man in conventional business attire, a shorter one in a rumpled coverall, a nondescript person, no doubt representing law and order,
and Captain Serrano. On the wide, polished table that Cecilia recognized as Brazil wood lay a small packet, something lumpy encased in a bag or sack.
The owner, I presume? I'm Innes Odessen, madam. This is Chief Brynear, the individual in charge of your refitting. And Mr. Files, the local investigator for CENTCOM.
Lady Cecilia de Marctosa Bellenvo, of the Aran Lake Sept, Fides de Beraclough.
Cecilia had not heard herself introduced formally for some time. Now she remembered why she disliked it so. It sounded silly. It could also go on another 5 lines or so if she didn't stop him. The complete formality gave the genetic makeup, political affiliations, and social standing of the male and female lines for 6 generations, but was usually reserved for those assumed to be ignorant of it and in need of awe.
And yes, I'm the owner.
The ship's registry lists you as Lady Cecilia Marctos. I presume that's equivalent?
Yes. The registry doesn't have room on the owner's line for all of it. I asked, and they said it would be adequate.
And you are the same Lady Cecilia to whom the yacht designated SY00021-38HOX was originally registered?
Yes, of course I am.
His gaze flicked from her to Captain Serrano and back.
Then I regret to inform you that your vessel has apparently been involved in illegal activities of a criminal nature. How long has this Captain Serrano been your commanding officer?
Since I left the court. I dismissed my former captain for incompetence and refusal to follow my orders, and Captain Serrano had just resigned from the regular space service. She had signed with the employment agency I use, and they recommended her highly.
And that agency is?
I don't see what this has to do with anything.
Whatever was going on, Cecilia was sure Captain Serrano hadn't been involved. The woman might be a stiff-necked military prig, but she wasn't any kind of a criminal.
Perhaps you would be kind enough to explain just what sort of illegal activity you are talking about.
Files pointed to the packet on the table.
Do you know what that is?
No. I suppose you are going to explain.
In good time, madam. You're sure you've never seen it before?
I told you I...
Excuse me, but if you are contemplating criminal charges against Lady Cecilia or her captain, you surely remember that you must inform them.
I know that. But if the lady had nothing to do with it, her answer might help.
I think she will answer no further questions until you have explained, to my satisfaction, what you think it is.
We believe it to be smuggled goods. It has not yet been subjected to forensic examination, but just glancing at it, my guess is proprietary data.
You mean trade secrets? Something an industrial spy might have made off with?
Possibly. Because proprietary data is secret, it...
Our secret.
Cecilia might not know much about industry, but she knew data was a plural noun.
Whatever you say, madam, our secret. Anyway, theft is not reported. It may not be known. It's not like jewels in a vault.
Could it be military?
Cecilia looked at her captain, who looked back with dark, inscrutable eyes.
Possibly. Forensics will tell us.
Fleet should know.
Not even a ridiculous purple uniform could make Harris Serrano look unimportant. Cecilia tried to imagine her former captain in the same garb and realized that he'd have looked like a purple blimp straining at its tether. This woman, in his black, would have looked dangerous.
Fleet forensics could assist.
I'll be the judge of that.
Ser Granzia stirred at Cecilia's side. Files shot him a glance.
Did you have legal advice, Ser Granzia?
That, if it is possibly a military secret, the captain is correct. Some representatives should be present when it is examined in any detail. Otherwise, we may all find ourselves compromised. You remember, no doubt, the decision of Army versus Stellenbosch?
Very well. I will inform the local military attaché.
Perhaps we could wait while you do so.
Cecilia wondered if she was imagining the threat in his tone. Files flushed, asked for a comlink, and spoke into it. He set it back down with care, as if he really wanted to throw it through the wall, and said the attaché would be along shortly. Cecilia was in no mood to wait for more information.
Captain Serrano, can you tell me how this was found?
Yes. You remember that I authorized Velarsen and Company to exchange all damaged units from the environmental system rather than repairing them in place?
Of course.
That was for reasons of both time and safety. You may also recall that I had Mr. Brynear document the condition of those components to back up your damage claim on Diklos and Sons. Some components could be repaired, and we were to get a refund on those. In the process of examining the components removed, Mr. Brynier's technicians found items secreted in several. Most suggestively, in the scrubber which we were going to examine when Ickland was killed, because he didn't have his suit on.
What does that have to do with it? Oh, he knew something was there, something you'd find?
We can't know, Lady Cecilia. There's a chain of occurrences that makes me suspicious of Ickland and possibly others formerly or presently in the crew. The system flush and recharge that Diklos and Sons didn't do. The curiously inefficient course your former captain set on the way to court, which made you late. Ickland's apparent haste to get to that scrubber before I did, at the cost of his own life.
You think he was smuggling something? Ickland and Captain Olin?
It's possible, madam. Ship's crews have been known to do so without an owner's knowledge. Of course, sometimes the owner is also involved.
Are you suggesting the Lady Cecilia was involved in any putative illegal act? Remember...
I remember the Sahil Tomaso ruling, Sir Granzia. I made no accusation. I merely answered what seemed to be Lady Cecilia's question. Now, procedurally, we must impound the evidence, which includes the location in which it was found. I'm afraid your ship is that location.
Cecilia could hardly believe her ears. Was everything against her?
Not so, Mr. Files. The scrubbers were not in the ship when the items were found. They had already been removed. All environmental system components are dockside. What's in the Sweet Delight is new and empty.
But that's where they were, on that ship with the contraband in them. There may be more hidden somewhere else. It doesn't matter where the scrubbers were when the evidence was actually found.
On the contrary, according to the rules of evidence in a list of rulings going back to Essex versus Jovian Mining Limited, impoundment of the container does not include impoundment of the vessel in which that container was transported, if the discovery occurred while the container was not aboard.
But we know the contraband was aboard!
But it doesn't matter, Mr. Files. The rulings are all clear, and all in favor of my client. I will be glad to get a local ruling, of course. But I'm sure it will uphold my client's position. Now, shall we contact Fleet? I believe it is better for us to do this together.
Files looked angry, but nodded. Ser Granzia turned to Enes Odessen, the senior partner of Velarsen and Company.
May we use your equipment?
Of course, Ser Granzia. But I'm afraid that we cannot give Lady Cecilia full credit for the repairable elements of the system until they are released from official custody. I'm... sorry, but...
I quite understand. Indeed, it would be unfair. And my client will be satisfied if you keep account of what was impounded. If it should be released and still worth repair, perhaps you will bid on it.
Oh, certainly. Mr. Brynier assures me that at least 60% of the components would be worth working on.
Excellent. Now, it seems to me, Mr. Files, that the discovery of items secreted in the scrubber suggests a motive for Ickland to attempt removal at risk of his life. In fact, it strongly suggests his complicity in some illegal activity, and Captain Serrano's innocence. I would suggest that a search warrant, limited to Ickland's personal items and storage spaces, might prove fruitful.
But...
Ser Granzia's hand clamped on her wrist.
It need not inconvenience Lady Cecilia or interfere with her schedule, provided that you act in a timely manner.
Files seemed sapped of energy. Cecilia wondered if Ser Granzia's voice had a hypnotic overlay.
Right. I'll get that done as soon as we've contacted the military.
Before she knew how it happened, Cecilia found herself sitting across a table from Harris Serrano in Dessen's private office, with a tray of hot pastries and a variety of drinks before her. Ser Granzia was still in conference with Mr. Files and Dessen. Dessen's assistant had brought the refreshments and now left them alone. Cecilia watched her captain pour herself a cup of something hot from a fluted pot. The woman had a quality Cecilia had not yet defined but found attractive. She never fidgeted, never seemed divided against herself. Yet she did not seem insensitive. Someone who had read and enjoyed Silvas could not be insensitive.
You may win our wager, milady.
Harris offered the steaming cup to Cecilia, who shook her head.
Circumstances have changed. Perhaps I should withdraw.
No. A wager's a wager. I shall look forward to my lessons on your mechanical horse.
She had an engaging grin, Cecilia decided, which made her look years younger.
I still think the interruption of officialdom makes it unfair. Suppose I exchange honors and let you teach me more about my ship. I'm now convinced my own ignorance is both inconvenient and culpable.
The dark eyes measured her. Cecilia felt suddenly as if she had become a novice rider, facing a stern judge in her first event. Why had a woman with such a gift of command given up her commission? Cecilia could not believe it was anything dishonorable, not with those eyes. A mistake, a quarrel. She had not seemed quarrelsome so far, even when confronted with Ronnie's rudeness.
If it is your pleasure, then I will be very glad to show you over your ship. But I cannot consider it as your obligation under our wager unless I actually win. And despite the best your legal firm can do, I expect we will be late leaving.
I'm beginning to think this year's season is jinxed. Here I was invited for the opening day. Planned to be early for once. Planned to attend the first ball, even. Then Olin got me to court late, and I had young Ronnie foisted on me. And now this. If I'm not careful, I'll break a leg or something and miss hunting altogether.
How long does it last? If it's more than a few days, we should be there for some of it.
The ignorance surprised her again, but she reminded herself that even among her class, not everyone knew much about fox hunting.
The season is just that, a whole season. In this case, a planetary quartile. Ideally, fox hunting is done when it is cool enough so that the horses don't overheat in the long chase, damp enough for hounds to pick up the scent.
Then...
Oh, we'll arrive before it's over, if something else doesn't happen. But it's the opening, the first day, that excitement. You can't understand. You haven't been there. I love it anyway. Wet days and dry. I'm one of the last to leave. It's just different, that's all.
Did you ever do any sailing?
Sailing? You mean on water?
Serrano nodded.
Yes, a little. Bunny has lodges on island groups. I remember sailing little boats, hardly more than float boards, one afternoon. Why?
Because what you describe for hunting reminds me of racing season at my grandparents' place on Lowen. There again, there's a season, a weather pattern that fits the sport. And on the first day, all the boats, from the little sailboards up to square riggers, parade along the coast. Everyone wants to be there.
Did you race sailboats?
A cousin and I did, before we went in the academy. It was a Ricks class, which wouldn't mean anything to you, any more than horse terms do to me. And I crewed on a larger yacht one summer.
And will you do that when you retire? Go back there and sail?
No, m'lady. Lowen is where fleet officers retire. I wouldn't fit in there, and I've no desire to embarrass my family.
I hardly think you'd embarrass anyone. Is it such a disgrace to captain my yacht?
No, not at all. Nothing to do with that, this, at all. Never mind. My retirement plans are far away, and we have a present problem. How to get you to your hunt on time? I'll check with Sirkin and see if we can't cut some corners.
With your concerns for my safety?
Yes, with due concern for your safety. There's another matter, m'lady. It's about your crew.
What? Do you think they're all smugglers? I'm sorry. I am trying to be funny, and it's not working.
No wonder. You've had your schedule disrupted. You've lost a crewman through a dangerous accident. You've nearly been accused of smuggling. And you had to spend several days of uncomfortable travel under emergency restrictions. Frankly, I think you're holding up surprisingly well.
You do?
Yes. Nonetheless, I must bother you about the crew.
Serrano paused to sip from her cup and take a bite of pastry. Cecilia noticed again the dark smudges under her eyes. She picked up a pastry herself and tried it. Leathery compared to those her own cook turned out.
You hired your crew from one employment agency. Who recommended that agency to you?
I hired you from the same agency. What difference does that make?
It's a bit of embarrassment, but... they don't send you their best. They admitted that to me when I asked them to forward some new information on the crew.
But I'm a Billinvoe. Surely they wouldn't...
What they said was that you did not need the level of expertise that a large ship did. Their top people go to big shipping and passenger lines, where they have a chance to move up.
I pay very high salaries. That ought to mean something if my name doesn't.
Serrano stared her down. Cecilia felt again the power of that dark gaze.
It means you get greedy incompetence. Except me, of course. I wasn't so much greedy as desperate to get a civilian job. But they did not recommend me for a commercial ship because of my background. The big corporations like to train their people their own way and find a military background a hindrance. You've got a very good navigator in Sirkin. She topped her exams, and I'm very satisfied with her work. But the others, m'lady, looked on your yacht as a cushy berth where they would be well paid for doing little, and your previous captains seemed to have concurred.
But everything seemed to run smoothly. Cecilia tried to remember if she'd ever noticed anything. Not really. As long as she arrived where she wanted to, when she wanted to, she had assumed the ship was fine. It certainly cost enough.
And I had the regular maintenance and inspections. I don't know what more I could have done.
Even as she said it, Cecilia realized how she'd feel if someone said that about a stable in which they boarded their horses. She had had contempt for owners who didn't know, who didn't seem to care, about the details of stable management. Apparently, she had made the same error with her own ship.
You paid for them, you mean? You had to trust your crew because you didn't know yourself what to look for. And I think that for some years you had honest, if less than superb, crew members who did their duties fairly well. A good captain would have been enough to provide the initiative and discipline for crew who were competent but uninspired. But in Masimir Olin, you did not have a good captain. I don't know with any certainty, but I suspect that he was looking for exactly such a ship. A small but fast vessel belonging to someone with no knowledge of ships or space. A vessel whose owner might be expected to visit places closed to commercial trade. You let him choose replacement crew, of course. And when old Tatinka had that heart attack, he hired Ickland from the same agency as the rest.
But it's quite reputable. It's the top agency in its field.
Cecilia's mind whirled. She had never thought of herself, independent to the point of eccentricity and with no romantic susceptibilities, as anyone's natural prey. The image of herself as a fat sheep which a wolf might stalk seemed both ridiculous and disgusting.
It is reputable, but no agency is immune from penetration. Where there is blood, the bloodsuckers gather. Where there is wealth...
I know the saying, but I never expected it to apply to me. I'm old, unattached, and intend to remain that way. My money will revert to the family when I die.
You are free transportation for your crew. You pay well enough that they know you must have more. You have everything done by top firms. But I think for Olin, it was the places you could go without comment. The places he wanted to go, which you could take him to.
You had a point to make about the crew?
Yes, I did. I had intended to suggest some replacements of the least effective after your season of hunting. Considering what's happened, I think you have both cause and justification for making some changes now, assuming you don't want to start with me.
Don't be silly. I don't blame you for any of this.
You might well have. Good captains don't let such accidents happen. Anyway, you need a replacement for Ickland. I'm seriously concerned about the entire environmental department, and would suggest you also drop the new juniors, retaining only the survivor of the accident. Mr. Gavin, I believe to be honest, though totally devoid of initiative, and I think he can be salvaged by some good training. Your pilot... Actually, besides his manner, I have no complaint of his performance. But he strongly defended Olin's choice of course in the face of a possible course that would have had you on your schedule. I suspect his complicity. We could do without a pilot. I am licensed for that duty, a separate qualification, and the expense of this refitting would explain your dropping him entirely.
But can we find good crew out here?
Yes. In fact, I've asked Mr. Brynier about that already. As this is a major repair facility, there are always crews coming through. Someone is sick and stays behind. Someone is unhappy and jumps ship. Not that we want that sort. Velarsen and Company and other firms hire these temporaries, and their work records here give us something to go on. Also, there are people who start in refitting who want to work aboard a ship. If they've taken their exams and we interview their supervisors, we can find some good ones. But it's up to you, m'lady.
Exactly what Cecilia didn't want on her ship. She wanted it to function perfectly without her having to make any decisions at all. Just transportation,
But of course, there were people who looked at horses as just transportation, and she knew what she thought of them.
I've always left it up to my captains. Are you asking me to interview with you, or...
If you wish. It might be helpful to you to understand what I would look for in applicants. But what I meant is that I would not dismiss your employees without gross negligence on their part. You had some input, I assume, in the size of crew when you started out.
Well, to be honest, I took the advice of the employment agency even then. Told them what I had bought and asked them to arrange a crew. I was a fool, wasn't I? Just like the people I've known who've gone broke with racing stables. It just never occurred to me that the same things could happen here, in a simple little yacht.
You had other things to think about, I'm sure. Why don't you come along to some of the interviews at least, and begin to pick up some of the terms? It will impress applicants, and it won't bother me.
Fine, I will.
Cecilia would learn every screw and bolt on her ship, the way she had once learned the anatomy of horses, and every piece of leather and metal on her tack. How could she have left herself unguarded like this?
And don't be hard on yourself.
Cecilia blinked. Was the woman a mind reader as well?
Remember, I still don't know anything about horses. Welcome aboard, m'lady.
8 hours late, they would be, undocking, but Harris felt happy anyway. Better a good job than a fast, sloppy one. She had inspected the replacements with Mr. Brynear 6 hours before and knew the new system was up to spec. Her new environmental team knew what they were doing, and Timmons was rapidly learning. He wanted to keep his job. The disgruntled pilot had complained bitterly about being dumped in the middle of nowhere. Lady Cecilia had finally paid his passage to one of the inner worlds of the system, even though her legal advisor said it wasn't necessary. Lady Cecilia had told her gleefully about the stormy battle going on between Diklos and Sons, the insurance company, and her lawyers. She thought she would get her money back, at the least, and she had convinced the union that Icklin's death was probably due to the bad work done by Diklos. So now Diklos had the union on their backs as well. Lady Cecilia's staff had boarded an hour ago. Harris had given Bates the staff emergency directives, and he'd taken them without comment. They would soon begin emergency drills, proper drills, and this would be a proper ship.
Thank you, Captain Serrano.
Lady Cecilia and her maid came aboard serenely, as if nothing had happened. Harris saw her eyes flicker at the change in uniform. Harris had squeezed in a visit to a good tailor, and while it was still purple, it lacked the scarlet, teal, and cream trim and about half its gold braid. The docking access tube still had a thick carpet, but the walls were properly bare for inspection, conduits and tubing color-coded in accordance with Transportation Department directives. Behind Lady Cecilia, her nephew and his friends straggled in. Harris watched them with contempt behind her motionless features.
Welcome aboard.
Harris walked past them, out the tube to the dockside. Bates was waiting in the passage to see to anything more they needed. She would have avoided the greeting altogether, except that she wanted to say a last few words to Brynear.
I hear you had a wager with your owner. She making you pay up?
She'd have let me off, considering the circumstances.
Harris liked his sort of toughness, his competence. He reminded her of the best she'd known, a memory she didn't want right now. She pushed it out of her mind.
But the forfeit's to learn more about what fascinates her, horses of all things. And if I'm to be a good captain for her, I need to understand her.
If it weren't rude and nosy, I'd ask you a question.
It is, and I won't answer it. I know what you'd ask, and I'm not ready to talk about it. Just wanted to thank you for a good job done well in a hurry. I'm glad we were able to argue our way past your schedule. And sorry to disrupt it.
You can disrupt my schedule anytime. As I would have made clear if you were leaving so soon.
Harris smiled. He was attractive, but not that attractive. Yet. The other memories were still too clear.
You can repair my ship anytime. As I did make clear. But I wish we didn't have to leave now. Thanks.
You're welcome, Captain.
Brynear threw her a civilian's version of a salute and turned away. Harris went back to the ship and thoroughly enjoyed showing her crew that she was as good as the former pilot at undock and tug maneuvers.
You shouldn't have insulted the captain to her face.
They were 2 days out of refitting, 2 days of cool courtesy between Cecilia and the young people. Ronnie pouted, but she did not relent.
Don't put out your lip at me. It was wrong, and you know it.
I didn't know she was there. I didn't know Aunt Cecilia had approved it. It's too bad, really. I never asked to come along on this ridiculous cruise. It was all my mother's idea.
You'd rather be supervising a loading team at Scavel or Shingsan? Come on now, Ronnie. This isn't bad. I admit I wasn't planning to be home for the season this year, no more than Bubbles. But it's not as if visiting my father were a hardship.
That's not what I meant.
Ronnie looked around for sympathy and found expressions that told him he was boring. And boring was one thing they would not accept.
Why don't we swim? Now that we can use the pool again, a nice swim would be fun.
Bubbles stretched her long, elegant arms and wriggled in a way that suggested something other than swimming. The others agreed. Ronnie knew he should swallow his sulks and go with them, but the sulks were too embedded. They turned to look back at him.
Go ahead. I'm going to try Begumin one more time.
That was the computer game they'd been playing until it palled, and Ronnie never had gotten above the 8th level. He had no real intention of playing Beggarman. He wanted to regain the ground he felt he'd lost with the captain. A private apology should do it. He had charmed his way past fiercer dragons than this. No woman of her age could be immune to boyish charm. He showered, put on a fresh jumpsuit, and looked at himself in the mirror. He slicked his hair. Innocence? No, it looked as if he were trying for innocence. He tousled it. Mischievous? Yes, that should do it. He waited until the others had logged into the pool enclosure. Then he strolled down the curving passage, slipped through the hatch between crew and staff areas, and found his way to the bridge. It wasn't that hard. He had memorized the ship plan on his desk comp.
16, 16, 709, 709.
The bridge did not meet his expectations. He had envisioned something like the bridge of a training cruiser. Aside from that, and the small craft he'd piloted, he'd never been aboard a ship. He stared at the small room crowded with screens and control boards, the watch seats crammed in side by side, the command bench hardly an arm's length from any of them. Something was going on. He sensed the tension. He had expected to find silence, even boredom. He had expected to be a welcome break in a monotonous shift. But no one seemed to notice him. With all the confidence of youth and privilege, Ronnie strolled into the crowded space.
Excuse me, but when you've got a moment, Captain, I'd like to speak to you.
He expected a prompt response. He did not expect the smart crack of an open hand across his face. It sent him reeling into the back of someone's chair. He grabbed for a support and found a handy rail along the bulkhead. His cheek hurt, his mouth burned. Anger raged along his bones, but he was still too shocked to move. He saw hands flicker across control boards. Just as he got his breath back, he felt the gut-deep wrench he knew from his one training voyage. The yacht was flicking in and out of a series of jump points. Anger drained away. Fear flooded him now. Jump transitions. They'd been near jump transitions, and if he'd interfered, they might all have been killed. The quick remorse he was never too proud to feel swept over him. He gulped back the apology he wanted to make. He should wait. He should be sure it was safe. Then Captain Serrano turned to him, anger on her dark face.
Don't you ever come on my bridge again, mister.
Ronnie's eyes slid around the room. No one looked at him.
Go on, get out.
But I came to say something.
I don't want to hear it. Get off the bridge.
But I want to apologize.
She took a step toward him, and he realized that he was afraid of her. Afraid of a woman a head shorter, in a way he had not feared anyone since childhood. She took another step, and his hand fell away from the rail. He backed up.
You can apologize to my crew for nearly getting us all killed, and then you can go away and not come back.
I'm sorry. I really am.
She came yet another step closer, and he backed up. She reached out, and he flinched. But she touched a button on the bulkhead, and a hatch slid closed 4 inches from his nose. Bridge access, press for permission, appeared on a light board above it. Ronnie stood there long enough to realize that his cheek still hurt, and she wasn't going to let him back in. Then he got really angry.
It wasn't my fault, George.
No one else had seemed to notice, but George had asked about the mark on his face.
I mean, it was, in a way. But I didn't mean to interrupt during a jump transition. She didn't have to take it that way. Damn military arrogance. She hit me. The owner's family. All she had to do was explain. Just you wait. I'll get even with her.
Are you sure that's a good idea?
But George's eyes lit up. He loved intrigue, especially vengeance. George had engineered some of their best escapades in school, including the ripely dead rat appearing on the service platter at a banquet for school governors.
Of course. She has other duties. We have nothing to do between here and Bunny's place but get bored and crabby with each other. First thing is, we'll get into the computer and find out more about her.
You could always give a little kick to one of her drills.
Exactly.
Ronnie grinned. Much better. A good attack beats defense every time. He'd read that someplace. Harris could have believed the sweet delight knew it smelled sweeter. Or perhaps it responded to the change in the attitude of its crew. Without the sour-faced pilot and the inept moles, with the addition of two eager, hard-working newcomers, crew alliances shifted and solidified around a new axis. A healthier one, to Harris's mind. They were not yet what she would call sharp, but they were trying now. No one complained about the emergency drills. No one slouched around with the listless expression that had so worried her before. Perhaps it was only fear of losing their jobs, but she hoped it was something better. It had been unfortunate that she'd hit the owner's nephew. She knew that. She knew it was her fault from start to finish. She had let them leave the hatch to the bridge open. On such a small ship, with a small crew, where the owner never ventured into the working compartments, it had seemed safe. She had not noticed when he came, and when he startled her, she had silenced him in a way that might have been hazardous, would have been with some people. She was ashamed of herself, even though they'd made it through a fairly tricky set of transition points safely. She called Cecilia as soon as they were through and explained.
It was my fault for not securing the bridge.
Never mind. He's been insufferable this whole trip. His mother spoiled him rotten.
But I should have...
It's not a problem, I assure you. If you want to feel chastened, schedule your first riding lesson today.
All right. 2 hours from now?
I'll be there. Regular gym suit will do for now.
Harris finished the necessary documentation of jump point transition, completed a few more minor chores, and left the bridge to Mr. Gavin.
This is your practice mount.
Harris had expected something like a metal or plastic horse shape on some kind of spring arrangement, but the complicated machine in front of her looked nothing at all like a real horse, except for the saddle, a traditional leather saddle, on a cylindrical section that might have been plastic. It could have been an industrial robot of some sort, with its jointed appendages, power cable connectors, sockets, and dangling wires with ominous little clips. Harris had seen something vaguely like it in one of the wilder bars on Durango.
But that was a mechanical bucking bull.
The jointed extension in the front acted as the horse's neck and head, allowing the rider to use real reins. At the moment, the real reins were looped neatly from a hook on one side.
There are sensors in the head which record how much rein pressure you're using and feedback to the software. Yank the reins, and this thing will respond very much like a real horse. You'll also get an audible tone to let you know when your rein pressure is uneven.
The VR helmet rose from a cantilevered extension behind the saddle.
It's set now at beginner level. I'll control pace and direction. You'll just feel the gates at first.
Cecilia stood near a waist-high control panel, which Harris noted had several sockets for plug-in modules, as well as the usual array of touch plates. Harris stared at the thing. She had not enjoyed the obligatory riding lessons at the academy that much, and this looked like the perfect apparatus for making someone look stupid and clumsy. But a bet was a bet, and she owed Cecilia 10 hours. The sooner she mounted, the sooner it would be over.
You don't have to use the VR helmet at first. Why not just get on and off a few times and let me start it walking?
Fine.
Harris tried to remember just how mounting went.
Left foot in the stirrup, but the hands...
On the real horse, they'd been taught to grip the reins and put a hand on the neck in front of the saddle. Here, that would have meant on a pair of gray cylinders like slim pipes. She put both hands on the front of the saddle and hauled herself upward.
Whoa!
The machine lurched sideways and she slipped back to the deck.
No, sorry. I wasn't ready to correct for that kind of mount. You need to be closer and push off more strongly with your right leg. Straight up, then swing your leg over. If you hang off the side of a rail horse like that, it's likely to unbalance, reach out a leg, and step on you.
Harris tried again, this time successfully. She felt around with her right foot until she got the stirrup on. Cecilia came over and moved her feet slightly.
Wait on the balls of your feet for now. We're going to start with a simple all-around seat. And no reins for now until you've got the seat right. Just clasp your wrists in front of you. Let me connect the other sensors.
This meant clipping a dozen dangling wires to Harris's clothing. She felt she was being restrained by gnats. Cecilia retreated to the control column and touched something. The machine lurched. Harris wondered if she was about to be thrown off, but it settled down to a rhythmic roll and pitch. Her body remembered that it felt quite a bit like riding a real horse.
It's strange.
Harris might have to take riding lessons, but she didn't have to refrain from comment.
It's expensive. Most riding sims are limited to 3 gates, 1 speed at each gate, and all you can do is go in a circle or straight. This one can keep me in shape.
Harris did not say what she thought this time. Keeping one old woman in shape hardly suggested that the simulator had great powers. She didn't have to refrain from comment, but she didn't have to be rude either.
Let me try the helmet now.
If her face was covered by that massive instrumentation, no sudden expression could give her away.
Go ahead. I think you'll be surprised.
The helmet had all the usual attachments and adjustments. Harris got it on as the sim kept up its movement. As her eyes adapted to the new visual field, she saw in front of her a horse's neck swinging slightly up and down with 2 ears, and reins lying on that neck, and a long line from the horse's head to someone standing in the center of a white-railed ring.
It doesn't look like you. Who's the brown-haired man with his arm in a sling?
Sorry, someone I used to train with. Is that better?
Now it was Cecilia, but a younger Cecilia. Her hair flaming red gold, her tall body dressed in sweater and riding breeches. She looked vibrant and happy and far more attractive than Harris had imagined her.
Yes. It really does look like a horse.
Of course, the simulator for a cruiser really did look like a cruiser, and the simulator for a station tug really did look like a station tug. That's what simulators were supposed to do. But maybe Cecilia didn't know that.
Like any horse.
Into the helmet appeared a dizzying array of horse necks and ears. Black, brown, white, gray, short, long, thick, thin, with and without manes. Harris blinked.
I can see that.
The visual settled back to the original neck and ears, light brownish yellow.
Now, you're going to reverse.
Harris expected to halt and back up, but reverse in this case meant making an egg-shaped turn and beginning to circle in the opposite direction, once more facing forward. Different terminology. She filed it away. Next time, she would be properly braced for the turn rather than the halt. By the end of that first hour, she had walked virtual circles in both directions, halted, reversed, and even done enough trotting to make her thighs ache. She remembered this from her academy days. There, too, they had walked and trotted back and forth until their legs hurt. It seemed pointless, but harmless, and it might even be good exercise. When she lifted off the helmet, Cecilia smiled up at her.
And did you find it as bad as you expected?
No. But is that all there is?
Not at all. I go faster.
You race?
Not racing, eventing. Do you know what that is?
Harris racked her memory and came up with nothing. Event. Had to be a sporting event of some kind, she presumed. But what? She shook her head.
Would you like to see?
Yes, of course.
Anything her employer cared about that much ought to be important to her.
And now, taking the field, Lady Cecilia DeMarcos on Buccinator.
She had not expected anything like the cube Cecilia showed her.
You did that? That was you on that yellow horse?
Chestnut. Yes, that was my last championship ride.
But those obstacles were so big, and the horse was running so fast.
That's what's different about this simulator. You can do all that on it. Well, all but falling in the actual water or getting stepped on by the actual horse.
You mean I could learn to do that? To jump over things like that?
Probably not, but you could come close. Cecilia extracted the first cube and fed in another.
This is what fox hunting is like. In fact, this is a cube I made 3 years ago.
You made?
Well, I used to be under contract with Yossi Sports. They'd mount the sim cam in my helmet, and I wore the wires as well.
Harris felt that she'd fallen into another layer of mystery. But she was tired of asking questions that must sound stupid, so she simply nodded. This time, the cube was not of Cecilia riding, but from the rider's viewpoint. She saw the green grass blur between the horse's ears, saw a stone wall approaching far too fast, and then it was left behind, and another appeared. Little brown and black and white things were running ahead, and other horses and riders were all around.
Those are the foxes you're chasing?
No, those are the hounds. The fox is ahead of the dogs. The dogs find the scent and trail the fox, and the horses follow the hounds. I'm sorry. It's not fair if you've never been exposed to it. But I thought everyone knew about foxes and hounds.
No. Some of us had better things to do with our time. Some of us were off fighting wars so that people like you could bounce around making entertainment cubes for each other.
But that was not entirely fair, and Harris knew it. It probably did take skill to ride like that, although what the use of that skill was, once you gained it, she still could not figure out. Cecilia handed her yet another cube.
Here, this is the text of an old book on the subject, and since it's one of the few left, you might want to look at it. Bunny's designed his entire hunt around it, even though we know that it predates the 20th century old Earth, and things must have been changed afterwards.
Harris looked at the cube file labeled Surtees with suspicion. Apparently, she would be expected to watch it on her own time. Historical nonsense about horses struck her as even more useless than current nonsense about horses.
And to be fair, I think it's time I schedule my first lesson in shipboard knowledge, or whatever you want to call it. Do you have time for a student later today?
Of course. When would you like to start?
Well, after lunch.
Fine.
You could eat with me and give me a head start. I don't even know what you want me to learn.
Thank you. I am at your service.
The Serrano Legacy Hunting Party is continued on the next CD.